the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
Right, so we're in the middle of our summer series, God's Champions. We're into week three. We're looking at the lives of some faithful champions of God and exploring how we ourselves can grow in faithfulness as we face our own challenges in life with God beside us. The champions we're studying all come from different phases of God's plan for his creation. In the past, some of us have used this sort of analogy of a six-act play. Just to help you understand, where do we lie today in God's salvation history? And where do the characters to the people of faith in the past, where do they lie? Because we all live in our own contexts. We all have our own cultures that we inhabit. We all have our own issues and tensions, our challenges, based on the world that we live in. So if we think of God's plan for creation along these sort of six acts of a play. From creation back in Genesis, we move through to the fall, a major event in God's salvation history. We then move into Israel and the people of God, the Old Testament as we know about it. From there, we move through into the time of Jesus, into the New Testament. And then perhaps from the book of Acts, we can talk about the church. And we can talk about our phase of salvation history. What are we up to in the world? What's life throwing up for us? And finally, right at the end of the Bible, into Revelation, we have recreation, that return to God's creation again. Creation, God's universe as it should be. And so that's sometimes helpful for some people. It works for me. I'm a visual learner. It helps me when I'm reading the Bible to know what's going on? Where do I hold this text? How am I meant to understand it? And so today, we're looking at Nehemiah, reflecting on that third act, that time of Israel, what we would call in the Old Testament, the Old Covenant promises that Abraham had received, things like that. We know already, you've been told that in Nehemiah, we're in this interesting phase in the people of God's history. The northern kingdoms, those 10 tribes, have already been taken away into exile. And then Judah was attacked and taken away. So we've had the Assyrians, we've had the Babylonians, we're now at a time of the Persians. These great empires have stepped, they've gone on holiday with their armies, basically, and just taken over the land. Those two major symbols of Jewish identity, of the people of God, the monarchy, the Davidic king, has come to an end. Because of this exile. And also we know that the temple has been destroyed. So both the political and the spiritual identity of the Jewish people, those people of God, has been eliminated. And the leaders and the treasures were all taken away into exile. Now, if you want to study these events in detail, then the Bible Project website has brilliant resources on it. We don't have time to go into huge detail. I'm a visual learner, so the posters I love. They also have an 8-minute summary video of Ezra and Nehemiah, because actually it's pretty much one book. And in the Jewish scriptures today, it still is one book, and it's read together. Okay, alongside Chronicles as well. So Chronicles, Ezra, Nehemiah, they work really well together. So if you've got time to read the whole thing or to watch the 8-minute video, brilliant. But we're just going to look at this little bit here today. We're just going to look at Nehemiah. And again, I'm not going to go through text after text after text. We're going to bounce around because we're going to look at the character of Nehemiah. So we're going to look at why was Nehemiah God's champion in history? And I think it's down to really, to be honest, to his character and how he used his character to respond to the circumstances he found himself in. That the circumstances he found in, he had to make decisions. And those decisions are informed by his own personality and his character. And so we're going to reflect on Nehemiah's character in order to raise questions about ourselves. Now, when I first became a Christian back when I was 22 at university, and I came from a non-Christian background, I hadn't didn't know the Bible that much and stuff. So one of the strategies I used to sort of try and catch up, if you like, from those people who had learned the Bible from year zero, was I read loads of Christian biographies. I'd find them, and these amazing people of God would go off and do amazing things. And I read loads of those, all sorts of different ones, and they were great. But after a while, I started to feel a bit insignificant because I didn't really go off and do great big things. And after a while, I actually stopped reading Christian biographies and got quite anti them because it seemed to me that, you know, my life was so not what these people were like, and it made me feel worthless and rubbish. And perhaps with maturity, I sort of came back to realize that God uses people in their own circumstances, with their personality and their spiritualities. And it's not that we have to be imitators 100% of other people. They've got to be true to who they are, and we need to be true to who we are. So as we look at Nehemiah, as we explore perhaps his character, have a think about, what's your character? What is your personality like? What's your spirituality like? In what ways can you glorify God? In what ways can you cooperate with God's Spirit in the circumstances and situations you find? Not so that you're a mirror image of Nehemiah. He lived at a different time and a different place. But that's what we're going to do today. We're going to look at his character. We're going to look at these areas. We're going to rattle through it quite quickly. I've got two things I'd love to do today. I'm probably only going to get to the first one, but I'll tell you a little at the end about the second one, which we can follow up a bit more on at another time. So I think there are five sort of points. I've gone away from a three-point sermon about Nehemiah's character. He's not content with the status quo. He's a proactive type of guy. He's willing to face challenges. He's willing to cooperate with other people, and he's resilient. So what we're going to do is we're just going to journey through these character traits. We're just going to highlight where they come up, if you like, or examples of that character, and then just reflect back on our own lives. Do we have the same character traits, or are our character traits different? Does that make a difference? So let's bounce through them. So the first one, Nehemiah's not content with his life experience, the circumstances and situations he's in. He's not content that there's a foreign king over him, not the Davidic king. He's not content that he's in a foreign land. He's not content that, if you like, the worship is foreign. Here's somebody who has taken time to learn about the past, to learn about his own identity. What does it mean to be a member of the people of God? Nehemiah was born and raised in exile, but clearly he knew about God's salvation plan, at least as far as God had already revealed it. He knew his scriptures from the Old Testament. He knew the Jewish law. Now, Nehemiah could have had a comfortable life. He was a cup server, which actually means he's very high up in the administration. This is not just some slave. This is somebody who actually has status. He could simply lie back and embrace his circumstances and say, God's put me here, and just get on with it. But he's not content to do that. He chose to remain pure and faithful to God's call to the Jews, to the promises that God had made. He wasn't content to just stick in his circumstances, to allow it to wash over him, to be washed there and back again in terms of his space in time and place. So it raises the question perhaps for us, what aspects of our lives are we content with? And what aspects of our lives are we not content with? For each of us, that may be different. What aspects of our lives is God speaking into? Are we listening to God speaking into our lives? If God's speaking in and just disrupting, making you a little bit uncertain about things, perhaps, is that maybe a message from God to say, reflect where I'm at. Look back on where you've been. Look at where you are and spend time reflecting forwards. So Nehemiah's character, he wasn't content. And secondly, linked very much with this, he was very proactive. Perhaps this is the central element of Nehemiah's character. Perhaps he achieved what he did because this lies at the heart of who he is. He's proactive in his faith. He's not passively expecting other people to do stuff. He's not simply there to receive, but he's there to do. He's seeking to change both himself and other people. And in chapter 1, we see that Nehemiah had learned that the exile was linked to impurity and faithlessness. Nehemiah does not make excuses for his people. He says, well, actually, I'm in exile. It's nothing to do with me. It's before my time. He embraces the circumstances. He takes ownership. So here in Nehemiah 1, it just says, remember the instructions you gave your servant Moses, saying, if you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the nations. But if you return to me and obey my commands, then even if your exiled people are at the farthest horizon, I will gather them from there and bring them to the place I have chosen as a dwelling for my name. Nehemiah knew that information. He clearly proactively studied his faith. And he's willing to get on and help bring about that, to be an agent of change. And so in chapter 2, as we've already heard, he proactively asks and seeks out permission to return and to rebuild. He's not leaving it for somebody else to do. Now, some people are naturally activists. Some people are those go-getters. That's not me. I play it safe. Some people by nature are the leaders. Now, we're not all called to be leaders. We're different people. I'm the sort of person who I don't tend to bring something new and go off and do that. I'm much more looking around for somebody who's already doing something which I think I might fit with and then join in. So again, some of you here might be people who are proactive, leading from the front. Others of you might be people who are more like followers, who want to cooperate and work with, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. So again, it's not about you must be X or you must be Y. It's about how do you fit in with the situation and circumstances and the people surrounding you. Character trait 3, his willingness to face challenges. It was a huge challenge. In chapter 2, we can read of the start, if you like, of the opposition. We heard it again in chapter 4 that was read out, and in chapter 6 it comes back again. Just this little bit here, when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official heard about this, they were very much disturbed that someone had come to promote the welfare of the Israelites. Nehemiah had to deal with those who were happy with the status quo. They liked how things were working out. They were actually administrators of the region. For them, they wanted everything to stay the same because it meant a job for life. It meant that they were able to have what they wanted. They didn't want change in the power structures. They were comfortable. They were top dogs of the region. They benefited from the status quo. They didn't want the Jews to be any different, to stand out, to draw attention, to challenge their own lifestyle. They thought they knew what life was all about. But Nehemiah was willing to stand up to that challenge. He didn't give up. He didn't say, this is going to be too hard. But he sought to bring about change, not waiting for other people to do it. So that's that proactive again. And moving on from that, he's not a micromanager, in a sense. He's not, I'll do it all. But he's willing to cooperate with other people. All the way through Nehemiah, we see this idea of Nehemiah being faithful to his people. He's faithful to the work, and he's willing to work with people, not do it all himself. So in chapters 2 to 7, we have a number of confrontations, but he doesn't do it himself. He motivates other people. He supports other people. And they're seeking together to restore Jerusalem. It's about teamwork. We're all different. We all have strengths. We all have talents. We all have gifts. And what Nehemiah does is he works with people. He doesn't do it all himself. He cooperates and he combines people's gifting together. But interesting, he doesn't just have conflict with those outside of the people of God. He also has conflict with people inside. He has challenges with those who are part of the people of God. And I think that's a really interesting one that sometimes we forget about. That in chapter 5, we can hear about when the Jews were selling their children into slavery. Why? Because other Jews were taxing them. There's all sorts of things going on. When I heard their outcry and these charges, I was very angry. I pondered them in my mind and then accused the nobles and officials. I told them, "You are charging your own people interest." Many of the Jews were comfortable in their circumstances and they were afraid of change. In the little passage that we read, chapter 4, it talks about some of the Jews came from afar to warn them of the threat. And the sort of implied meaning of that is if you stop this, the threat will go away. Change is difficult. Change is hard. And sometimes we can feel overburdened with things. We can feel like we're out of our depth. So again, cooperating with other people can sometimes help us. Some of us are the activists. Some of us are the people who can lead from the front. Others of us, me included, are much more, I like those sort of security sometimes. I don't like to make the big decisions. But if somebody else has made the big decision, I'll go along with them. So being part of the people of God is about working together. And Nehemiah was able to bring people together to do those things. Nehemiah saw the big picture of understanding how God's people were called to live different lives from those surrounding him. Some Jews didn't want to be different. They didn't want the hassle. They wanted the same identity. But Nehemiah was willing to question and challenge his own people. And then the last one, resilience. Nehemiah is made up of blocks. You have the introduction, Nehemiah 1. Then you have from Nehemiah 2 through to Nehemiah 7, you have the wall building. Now, Nehemiah 8 to 12, we have the celebration of completion. We have the temple running. We have the people repenting. We have the people coming back to God. We have the law going on. The law is reread over a number of days. There's a public assembly. The people begin to celebrate the great festivals of faith again. They confess their sins and repent. Nehemiah seems to have won them over with his program. They promise to turn back to God in faith. Jerusalem is repopulated. It becomes the city of God again. And yet this spiritual reform doesn't last long. In one sense, it would be nice for Nehemiah, the book of Nehemiah, to end chapter 12. Everything's back to normal again. Everything's like before the exile. The people of God are faithful. And there's that annoying chapter 13. Nehemiah goes away for a while, back to the capital the Persian Empire. When he returns, he finds that the people are scattered again. The people are not following the religious observances. They're not following the Sabbath. They're not doing the right stuff in the temple. In fact, the book of Nehemiah ends in a failure. Here's this great person of faith, and the book that's named after him finishes with the Jewish people, with God's people. Pretty rubbish, really. Not glorifying God, glorifying the other gods, not remaining faithful to God's call on their lives, but actually being faithful to the other gods and the other cultures. So what does Nehemiah do? Does Nehemiah throw his hands up in the air and say, "It's your own fault," and walk away? No, he gets stuck in again. Chapter 13 is Nehemiah keep working, keeps getting on. So we've got chapters 8 to 12, two steps forward, and then chapter 13, one step back. Nehemiah has resilience. He's got stickability. He's got endurance. He's in it for the long haul. He's not for the simple, quick solution, the easy route. He knows what people are like. He knows what I'm like, what you're like, how inconsistent we are sometimes in life. And so part of the character of Nehemiah is all about that stickability, that willingness to keep going. So we've rushed through it quite quickly. Okay. Nehemiah's character. He challenged not only the external culture, but he challenged the culture of his own people as well. He wasn't content with circumstances. He was proactive. He was willing to face challenges. He was willing to cooperate, and he was resilient. The book of Nehemiah is a journey, and it's not a physical journey back from exile. It's a spiritual journey. It's a relational journey of Nehemiah the man with God and with his fellow humans, as he sought to live out his life as a disciple of God in a multicultural, multi-faith environment. In one sense, that's not that dissimilar to the lives that we live, perhaps. He challenged the cultural values of his day, both outside and inside his community. Now, we live in a very different situation. My analogy of the six acts, we live in the church act. We live post the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. We don't live in the same time and place. How do we live faithfully in our different new covenant post life, death, and resurrection of Jesus? In Act 5, if you like, God's church context. We need to reflect on our own lives. Are we content with our own life experience and circumstances? Are we actively participating to bring about change in our own lives and in the lives of other people? Are we spending time getting to know God's vision? Are we spending time with God? Are we spending time working with others to bring about change? Are we accepting that change comes at a cost and change takes time in our own lives and in the lives of other people? I wonder which area you think you're doing well in. Have a reflection on you. You may not have these personality traits. But in general terms, where would you give yourself a sticker, a gold star? And which one area would you set yourself a challenge? Which one area do you think that maybe you need to work on more? Or maybe you need to ask for support from prayer triplets or from home group or from your own family in terms of just growing a little bit more? We're all different. There's no one size fits all. What's great is that God so loved the world. He loves everybody. Size, shapes, skills, talents. It's not that we have to become a certain type so much as that we just need to be moving closer to Jesus. And for each of us, that may be different. It may look differently. Now, Nehemiah was called to challenge the culture of his day. He was called to purity and separation. So how are we to relate? How into the cultures that we find ourselves? And in the last sort of 5 minutes, let's just reflect on this perhaps a little bit more. I think there's two ways that we could reflect on our culture. Stolen this from a book by Miroslav Volf called Exclusion and Embrace, who wrote in the former Yugoslavia theologian. When we look at the culture around us, when we look at the secular world, when we look at Exeter or wherever we're from and those circumstances, how are we to respond to the values, to the ideas, to the vision, to the hopes that our culture holds on to? And for Nehemiah, he was called to separate from it, exclusion. And some Christians, still down through the ages, believe that we should separate from culture. And there's some very famous Christian groups and people who do that. Perhaps the most famous ones would be people perhaps like the Amish in North America, or some of the more conservative Mennonite groups, where they cut themselves totally away from contemporary culture. We could call these Christians Christ against culture Christians, stealing the words from another author, a guy called Richard Niebuhr, who wrote a book, Christ and Culture. So perhaps we could say that Christ is against culture and we must separate from it. Now, the opposite extreme is embrace. That we embrace the cultural values because this is God's creation, and God's people who are made in his image have actually, through the gifts that God's given, that we can adopt the cultural values, the ideas, the lifestyle patterns, and live them out. So these Christians, we could perhaps say, these are Christ of culture Christians. Christ against, Christ of. And historically, some Christians have taken this approach. We sometimes call those from our church tradition looking out to others, we might call them universalists sometimes, or we might call them pluralists, or sometimes we'll use an old-fashioned word, they're liberals. But most of us, I'm sure here, will probably lie somewhere in the middle between exclusion and embrace. And I wonder where, are you closer to exclusion or closer to embrace, and why? Just to help you, how about these two questions for you? Do you see the world fundamentally bad? Yes, the world was made by God, but sin has come to dominate. God's grace is at work in the world, but so is evil. If you see that the world is fundamentally bad, you're probably going to move closer to the exclusion and the separate from the world, isolate yourself from contamination or whatever. Now, if you see the world as fundamentally good but damaged, God created this world with natural patterns and laws of how it works, and his spirit continues to work through it. Yes, it's fallen, but God's spirit is at work. Then perhaps you're more likely to move closer to the embrace. Our context is different from Nehemiah. So God's call on our lives and how we interact with our creation, with the cultures around us, may well be different. Now, later on in the autumn, we've got a Follow Me set of seminars, and one of those seminars will be looking at culture in more detail and exploring how do we make choices, how do we decide whether we're too far or too close to culture. We are in a very different world. We are post-Jesus in terms of his life, death, and his resurrection. That salvation has started. The kingdom of God is abroad. And if you read through the book of Acts, you'll see that there are major cultural shifts, that many of those early followers of God, the people of God, they wanted to remain Jewish, and you had to become Jewish to be a person of God. And yet through the book of Acts, you start to see that God's saying, no, you don't have to be Jewish by culture. So Stephen and the Ethiopian eunuch, we look at Peter and his vision. For those who know that, the Council of Jerusalem in Acts 15 was very much, you don't have to become fully Jewish to become a follower of God. And then Paul, throughout his ministry, but particularly maybe in Acts 17, the Areopagus speech, again, this is what he says in Acts 17. Paul then stood up at the meeting of the Areopagus. Now, the Areopagus is simply the leadership team, if you like, of the Greek philosophers. It's easier to think of it as that, and said, "People of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious, for as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I found an altar with the inscriptions to an unknown God. So you are ignorant of the very thing you worship, and this is what I'm going to proclaim to you." So in Acts 17, Paul actually uses the Greek culture of the philosophers to talk about the God of the universe. Interesting, Paul doesn't say, your culture's wrong, go away. He actually says, let me help you understand your culture. So there are different approaches to how we understand culture. And I've put some up there. And with this, you'll be glad I'm ending. We've got a prayer series running through linked to God's Champion series. And for each week that the series is running, there are seven, if you like, prayer points, one for each day of the week. So what I've done for this week is put down these titles and just explained different things that are going on. So for today's, on the 5th of August, it says, Christ of Culture. Pray that we will rightly discern which aspects of our contemporary culture reflect God's values and creative spirit. And then for Monday, we've got Christ against culture. Pray for wisdom to assess our culture through the lens of the gospel. What parts of our culture is God pleased with, but what parts of our culture is challenging those values, those ideas, that vision of God for his creation? And we need to chat about this. We need to discuss it. We need to think through these things. We need to talk to each other. we have different life experiences, we have different talents, different gifts to work through. So may I encourage you to work through that list, to have a look at Christ of culture, Christ against culture, Christ transforms culture, opportunities for you to help shape the local, regional, national culture of this country by involvement, whether that's politics, in all sorts of different aspects, charity work, whatever. Christ in culture, where's God already at work changing things? Where are his values coming through? Christ outside of culture, what about those people that our culture doesn't care about, the marginalized, the refugee issue that's going on, some of our homeless community? God still says they're valuable, even if our culture doesn't say that. What about Christ and culture? How can we be good citizens in those situations we find ourselves? And lastly, Christ above culture. Pray that the Spirit would speak into your life about how to become more Christ-like. So let's just pause and just pray. Father, I thank you for the life of Nehemiah. I thank you for the way that you touched him, the way that you used him, the way that you worked through him to bring about your plans and purposes for your people. I just pray for each of us now that you would touch us, that you would use us. You'd give us the wisdom, the skills, and the gifts to be your agents for change here in Exeter and further afield. Amen.